good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak, joining you all, the allies of the pod, the draft fans all over the world on draft day. This is Thursday morning, day one of the 2021 NFL Draft. And you know that Ben and I had to hop on and just give you a little preview podcast, talk about the craziness that is the final few hours leading up to the first overall pick being made here in this draft. Ben, how do you feel, man? I know it's the cliche to say Christmas morning, Christmas Eve, Christmas week, whatever. How you feeling today, bud?
The 2021 NFL Draft is officially underway with the first overall pick, the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast.
I'm very excited. How are you?
Dude, it is. We were talking about this yesterday. Wednesday is like is the best day. It's exciting. It's super frenetic. It's hectic.
Yeah, if you want to be stressed out for 24 hours.
But that's what I'm saying. It's frenetic. It's high energy. It's exactly what you think of in terms of the preparation for the draft. It's like, oh my gosh, everything is happening all at the same time, one after the other. It's unbelievable. Thursday is agonizingly slow. I feel like Wednesday goes in the blink of an eye, and then Thursday just chugs along. Like, I keep looking at the clock and being like, oh, okay, sick. Only 10 hours till the draft starts. Oh, okay, sick. Only 9 hours and 50 minutes. So, okay, 9 hours and 45. Let's freaking go.
I feel like I'm going to like stress eat so much throughout the day. Like, I feel like I'm just going to eat so many snacks up until whenever we go live for the pre-show, which I believe is at 6:30. And I feel like that's just not good for me.
I'm now worried about the number of snacks, where our set is, and how easily accessible they will be. Though I feel like my problem is that I won't eat, right? I'll just be like doing things and doing this and doing that. And then eventually it'll be 4. I'll be like, oh, I feel terrible. I wonder why. I've eaten nothing. But honestly, that's like I was saying on Thursday, though. It is, you do try to find a way to fill the time because it feels like the draft should be happening. And even when the draft is happening, it's still just the Jaguars sitting there with their number one overall pick not doing anything. You're like, come on, let's get this thing moving. So once we get to like the first big surprise pick, which I think will be either 4, if it's they really go left, they really take a haywire, or like 8, 9, right, where we get outside of like the Chase Waddle range.
Okay, but hold on. But before we get to those picks, because I don't disagree with you there, but the draft still starts at 3. Like, there's still a ton of mock drafts that came out yesterday and this morning that were these final mock drafts where it's split between Trey Lance and Mac Jones, and that's what we've heard the whole time. We heard that it was Mac Jones originally. Now it might be Trey Lance, and what we'll do on this show, just so you guys know, over the next, I don't know, 45 minutes or so, is Ben and I are going to go down the draft. We're going to be talking about the big breaking point selections, where teams could go different ways, where we might be surprised, recent reports that we've been hearing, basically updating you on all of the major points in the draft, because there's a lot of picks that we know will happen a certain way or a certain target position, but there's still a lot up in the air. And I feel like that still starts at number 3. You kind of sound like, nope, you don't agree.
I'm bored of 3. 3 is a quarterback. It's Mac Jones or Trey Lance. And if it's Mac Jones,
yeah, it matters.
Trey Lance, no, it's boring. I don't care anymore.
It matters, Ben, because nope, there are two drastically different outcomes if this draft is Mac Jones at 3 or Trey Lance at 3. If it's Mac Jones at 3, you have a lot of teams behind the San Francisco 49ers that all of a sudden get really interested. I think that the Carolina Panthers could still take a QB, as crazy as that is. I think the Denver Broncos, even after the Teddy Bridgewater trade, could maybe still take a QB if it's a Trey Lance or a Justin Fields. You've got the New England Patriots maybe looking to move up. You've got teams like Washington, Chicago, whatever. All these teams, I think, are then interested in a quarterback. And especially when you talk about pick 7 with Detroit, 8 with Carolina, maybe 9 with Denver.
Like the picks that I listed. Oh, that's interesting.
No, but I'm saying, we were getting there. We were getting to that point. I'm just saying that if Mac doesn't go at 3, it feels like he could seriously slide in the draft. But if Mac does go 3, all of a sudden it gets into a QB craze there at the end of the top 10.
Okay. But that's my point. My point is that, like, I have a script for what happens if Lance gets picked at three, and I have a script for what happens if Jones gets picked at three. And I can generally tell you how those dominoes will fall, right? Like, oh, if it's Trey Lance, then I don't think the Panthers or the Broncos would take a swing on Mac Jones. And I think that maybe he could get down to the middle teens, where Chicago and Washington would have a trade-up conversation for him. And that would mean that more offensive tackles and corners go off the board at 7, 8, and 9. And if it's Trey Lance, or if it's Mac Jones at three, then there's Trey Lance there. And it seems like if you read Peter Schrager and Daniel Jeremiah and Dane Brugler and Lance Zierlein, all of these guys expect the Broncos still to draft the quarterback if the right guy is there at nine. And so I have a general script for that domino. And if it falls this way, these dominoes fall. And if it falls the other way, the other dominoes fall. But eventually the ripple effects become like untraceable. You know what I mean? And to me, it's like when the Giants surprise and take Jalen Phillips at 11, or I literally just read a tweet that was like Barmore's on their board at 11, which, oh my gosh, a defensive tackle on the board for the Giants. Wow.
Dude, Field Yates said that on our last live mock draft that we did. Like, he contemplated Christian Barmore at 11, and I was like, whoa. And he said, yeah, no, you should believe this. This is something that could actually happen. Now there's more legs to it.
You don't have to name drop Field Yates, okay? I get it. You hang out with ESPN personalities.
If I just said Field, then people might have thought Justin Fields. I don't know. So I had to make sure I clarified with both of the names.
Yes. Good old Yates. And so, right, I think that, like, it's that big surprise, which, like, we could get 1, 4, 5, 6, but I think, like, we've talked about, Kyle Pitts and whatever. Like, I still think that the Falcons very much could surprise, because I'm not sold that Pitts is the best choice for them, so we'll see.
I think they want to trade down, but it sounds like they're pricing themselves out of it, you know? Like, it feels like at this point, yeah, they have a certain value that they would take for every single position, and it feels like they're shooting super high on it, because we've read that there's a lot of teams that are either inquiring to move up or at least picking up the phone when, say, a team like Atlanta is calling back, and there's not a lot of steam for a trade back for Atlanta, even though you and I have talked about this multiple times. It seems like the most advantageous avenue for them to go. And that makes me think that they're just pricing themselves way out of it. But maybe they have to wait to see exactly what happens at three, you know?
It is important for the Falcons. I'll put it to you this way. I think when you hear the reports of the Falcons, like, we're hearing offers and we haven't found one we like yet and whatever, so on and so forth, I think they're trying to drum up interest. I don't think they'll price themselves out ridiculously. You know what I mean? I think they'll have a standard, right? Like, it is the fourth overall pick in a quarterback heavy class. It is valuable, but I don't think they're going to try to highway rob somebody. I think if they get a fair deal, they'll take it. Cause I agree with you. I think they want to get out. I'm just not sure who's giving them that deal now, especially with the Broncos, at least theoretically off the quarterback market. It feels like you can wait a little bit longer to execute your trade up because you're not as worried about the team at nine, which could be the whole point, right? Like, the fact that big plugged in NFL Network and the Athletic and whatever guys still have the Broncos taking a quarterback, to me, is fascinating, because you could argue they just traded a sixth round pick one day before the draft and used that sixth round pick basically as a price. Like, that was the cost of throwing up a big smoke screen with only 24 hours for other teams to scramble, so that they are more likely to get one of Fields or Lance to fall to them. Right. And then, okay, if you're drafting Fields at nine, you didn't have to trade up for him. You basically just traded a one and a six. You traded a sixth round pick to ensure you got your quarterback. It's tremendous value if that was necessary. Do you see what I'm saying with this?
Oh, I follow you.
Yeah,
I do.
So I it's like I was I've said this before in the podcast with the Lions, where the Lions are so vocal about wanting to trade down, which maybe they really want to trade down, or maybe they don't want anybody trading up for them for a quarterback. The Broncos trade a sixth for Bridgewater. They have Locke on the roster. Okay, our quarterback room is set. Or we're just trying to make sure that nobody gets in front of us so that a quarterback can fall to us, right? And so because of the strength of the quarterback class and the perceived talent, at least by us on the outside, of guys like Justin Fields who might fall and Trey Lance who might fall, I don't want to rule out quarterback for pretty much anybody. But all these moves are weakening Atlanta's position at four.
What do you think about number five? Because that's I tweeted this on Wednesday night, that I feel as though the draft can drastically change from two different spots, because I think that there are two different spots where there are two different options. And like you said, there are different scripts that you could form afterwards, but they are drastically different than one another. One of them, of course, is at number three overall. If Mac Jones goes three or if Trey Lance goes three, I think that that really changes things. The other one is with Cincinnati at number five. And for the longest time, we've had Ja'Marr Chase here because we believe that that's going to be the pick. I still have that as my pick in my final mock, but there has been a lot of big media steam as of late, and by late I mean literally like the last 24, 48 hours, that it will be Penei Sewell. And I believe you have Ja'Marr Chase as well in your final mock.
Yeah, but in solidarity with you.
But you and I have talked about this before. Sewell would be the pick that we would make. It has not sounded like, from everything that we've been hearing, the people that we talk to, that would be the pick that they're going to make. I still have faith it's going to be Chase, but now all of a sudden that pick is less certain than it might have been, say, 2 days ago. And I think that pick means a lot because, you know, if Sewell ends up going five, then Chase starts a little run. Miami probably picks him the selection after. Then where does Jalen Waddle go? Do any of those picks right outside of the top 10, do any of those teams take the bait on Jalen Waddle? Where does he land? How far does that push Devontae Smith down, if it does at all? And then I think that really creates a big ripple effect from what happens here at number five.
Yeah, I think that I never felt like it was set in stone, right? Like this has been a tricky one. Because usually I just end up going with what I think logically makes sense for the team. And I really can see both sides of the Sewell Chase argument. I think that it is a warranted conversation for adding either player. I think both players make the offense measurably better. And I think that neither would be a bad pick. Neither is the wrong choice. Of course, that's knowing what we know now. And that is useless and unhelpful because there's definitely one choice that's better. And as of right now, I can't myself parse it. What sticks out to me with the Sewell thing is that it was long expected that the Bengals would draft Sewell. When the Bengals were third in the draft order, we were giving them Sewell. When they were second in the draft order, we were giving them Sewell. You know what I mean? Like this has always been the connection. Sure. And it's always so easy to get bored of a team player pairing in the mock draft process and in the draft process in general. You know what I mean? Like what's one connection you haven't stopped making? There isn't one. You've at least entertained other possibilities once, because obviously that's part of what the draft process is. But I feel like if the Bengals draft Sewell, you know, Zach Taylor and Duke Tobin will sit down for their press and they'll be like, yeah, we've wanted this guy since August and we never didn't want him. And we looked at other guys and Ja'Marr Chase is a great player, but we have always needed a tackle since day one of the 2020 season. And he has always been an absurdly good tackle prospect since he was 18 years old. So we always wanted to do this, you know, like it might be one of those situations where the Chase hype was at first media generated because we wanted to talk about something new and different angles and, oh, Joe Burrow. And I love my teammate, whatever. And then the Bengals just let that fire run because it helps them. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't hurt them at all. But to me, right, like I won't believe that we know for sure who this pick is until the moment the card's in. I think that right. I've said it before. To me, this is the most evenly split one in terms of people that I've spoken to and the way that I view the pick. So either way, Bengals are in a great spot. Bengals are in arguably the best spot in the top 10. Two players are almost 100% going to be there, and both of them should help their team a lot. Mm. Making the right decision is important, but I think that it's hard to go wrong at five. I'll put it to you that way.
I think that when teams kind of like start to snoop around when it comes to trades, either to like hop in front of a team or just maybe trading with that team straight up, you can learn a lot about a situation. And so, but it's still, it didn't really help bring clarity to the situation when we're hearing that there's a lot more movement on Sewell over the last 48 hours, that Sewell really could be the pick for them. But then we also learned that the Detroit Lions tried to trade up, reportedly, to the Atlanta Falcons spot at number four for Ja'Marr Chase. Like, they called the Falcons to go move up, and the Falcons were probably like,
I 100% did not hear this report.
Yeah,
this from
Jeremy Fowler and Dan Graziano, I believe, from ESPN, were the ones who reported this, that the Lions trying to move up. And I think that they were the idea was that they were moving up to number four for the Falcons, and I assume that it didn't go through because the Falcons were like, okay, I don't care who you're drafting. We're not trading you this pick unless it's for a quarterback price. And the Lions were like, okay, we're not going to do that. Like, that's just too much for probably a wide receiver. So that makes me think that the intel that they did, which could be false, of course, that's not like, that's not law, but the intel that they did still tells them that Ja'Marr Chase could be the pick. And this is, you know, not too far out from when we were hearing motion on the other side with Sewell. So from what we have been told, the more football guys who are in the room, who have a voice in the decision, want Penei Sewell. And it is the people above them who want Ja'Marr Chase. And I don't know which voice is going to prevail. And I think that that's why it's a big debate, because they really like both guys. And I think those are the two parties who are speaking there. And we'll see which one actually gets the final call when it's all said and done.
All right. Outside of the top 10, because this is where I've now officially not talked myself out of every single possibility, and I'm actually interested in things. Giants at 11, Patriots at 15, Raiders at 17. These are the most interesting teams to me. The Giants have a reasonable five-player board. Like I can't even say that because I don't know picks 1 through 10, but the Giants could expect Waddle and Smith to be on the board. Horn and or Surtain to be on the board. Rashawn Slater to be on the board. Michael Parsons to be on the board. And both edges to be on the board. All of them make sense.
Mm-hmm.
We get the sense that defense, particularly edge and linebacker, is the interest there. But also, it's not like, while that sounds Gettleman-y, it is difficult to predict what Gettleman's going to do. 15 to the Patriots. If not quarterback, which would require, I think, at this point, a trade up into the top 10, given what we're seeing.
Right.
Then what? People do Parsons. People do Zaven Collins. People do a corner.
Right.
Like Caleb Farley, Greg Newsome. People do Barmore, because everybody's trying to get Barmore in the top 20, but apparently maybe that's not actually a thing anymore. Don't know what they're going to do. And then Raiders at 17. The whole offensive line is gone. They cut multiple defensive linemen. Both of their linebacking additions last year were not helpful. Who do they start the tackle run? Which tackle do they like? Do they get a defensive player that falls to them? Do they like Jalen Phillips? Are they comfortable with him? Are they comfortable with Christian Barmore? These are both red flag players. It's John Gruden, and so it feels a little bit more predictable in terms of, you know, starting experience and major programs and captaincy and whatnot. But at the same time, because of the way they've emptied out the roster recently, you don't know what they perceive as needs and what they don't. Those are the three most interesting and difficult teams to me. If you are confident in any one of those picks, speak now or forever hold your peace.
I am still pretty confident in the Giants pick, and that's a dangerous sentence to utter because, like you say, you never exactly know what Dave Gettleman is thinking. But I also think that we know Gettleman well enough now to where when he says things that are clearly just contrary to what he has done in the past, we can kind of identify it. And he just has a pretty clear history of what he goes after. And, you know, the notes that I have on the Giants pick at 11, and I ended up having them select Micah Parsons at number 11. That's who I think that they're going to pick if he is still on the board. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The notes that I have are that in his pre-draft pressers, or just his pressers throughout the offseason, Gettleman once again uttered the words, offense scores points, defense wins championships. Like, he continues to believe that defense in offensive trenches, really, and then the defensive side of the football is where you build a team in the draft, because that's what's going to build a championship team. So, okay, let's take offensive line out of the equation. Let's also take wide receiver out of the equation, because he also said earlier in the offseason that the Giants came into the offseason looking at free agency, looking at the draft, looking at how much money they spent or how much money they had to spend, what positions were strong in free agency, what positions were strong in the draft, where they would want to allocate their resources, both in money with free agency and in draft capital with the draft. And they said, okay, that's how we're going to form it. They ended up pouring a lot of money at wide receiver, bringing in Kenny Golladay, bringing in John Ross, bringing in Kyle Rudolph at tight end as well. They brought back Leonard Williams, which is, of course, smart. Didn't make a single move at linebacker. Upgraded the secondary a little bit. So when you look at the tea leaves of where they did not spend their money in free agency, linebacker and then another edge opposite Leonard Williams, because Leonard Williams is an obvious one that they were going to keep around. Those are the two areas that they did not. address in free agency. The final domino for me was that the Giants are often a team that loves face-to-face meetings. They love to draft players that they were able to meet, shake their hand, do extensive research on, get to see in person, get to talk to their coaches in person, all that kinds of stuff. Joe Judge, who also seems like a no-nonsense, no-smokescreen, I'm-going-to-do-my-job kind of a guy, went to two pro days this cycle. Penn State, Micah Parsons, Miami, Jalen Phillips. I guess this is the final domino, is when they both, Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman, just continue to talk about versatility. Micah Parsons gives you a ton of versatility. He's got that edge background. He can play a variety of different spots for you along the defense. All of that is why I have a lot of conviction that Micah Parsons is going to be the pick if he's available. If he is not selected by the Giants at 11, I will actually be shocked. I really will be. And that's my thoughts on the Giants.
You will be shocked if the Giants don't take Parsons.
Yeah, I will at this point.
Publix chicken tender sub. If it's Parsons, I buy you one. If it's anybody else, you buy me one.
I'm not doing one prospect versus the field at number 11 overall.
Shock.
No.
That implies confidence.
I am cautiously confident in a Giant selection outside of the top 10. How did that?
You're the opposite. If you're cautiously confident, you're timid.
I said cautiously confident.
All right. What if I gave you Micah Parsons and Jalen Phillips?
Okay. Yeah.
And then if they draft any other player, trade up or trade back, I win.
No. At 11. What? At 11.
If they trade up and trade back, it's just a nullified
bet. Yep. Done.
Okay, that's fine. They don't really trade that much anyway.
Okay.
All right, so you're on Parsons and Phillips. I'm on literally any other player.
Yep.
Oh, feels great.
Let's
love
go, baby.
To be alive.
Let's go, baby.
Okay, I'm going to actually say this right now. If anybody's listening to the show and wants to be a member of the team and ally of the bot for like a whole day, I do not have time to listen back and record all of our bets from the Tuesday live stream podcast. So if you have them all down for the Public Chicken Tender Sub and you want to send them to me, I will be so very thankful.
I think we have four, right?
We made like seven on that podcast, Trev.
Did we
just made another one. Yes. We got very irresponsible by the end.
I hope there's not a big run one way or the other. Well, I hope there's a big run.
I want to show up and I'm like, I need to order five chicken subs for my friend. And I want him all have them all at once. That would make me happy.
When do you fly out? Do you leave on Saturday?
I leave literally the moment Saturday's done. So yes, this one will have to sit for a while.
Okay. So what we need to do
unless you want to come with me to the airport.
No, I'm not going to come. No, I'm not going to. I'm not going to
in the airport.
No, I'm not going to do that. But there is a Publix around here, and I think that we should get one on Sunday just to, as like a celebratory one of both me and you having one.
You said on Sunday.
You know what I meant to say was Saturday.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
So it could be a celebratory one between the two of us, unless, of course, one of our bets has already gone into place and the other one has to just sit there and watch the other co-host eat a delicious Publix chicken tender sub. Either way, I think we should do that on Saturday.
I accept. We'll find a way.
And now I'm hungry. Great. Just great. Just what I wanted. Bet online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball is in full swing. You can track all of it over at betonline.com. Of course, there's the NFL draft. Ben and I just recorded a final NFL draft prop bets episode a couple of days ago. You can go bet on that over at betonline.com. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as the teams prepare for their playoff runs in their different sports, as well as with the NFL draft coming down to the wire. You're getting the best bets right now. So head over to BetOnline or use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And of course, before we get back to it, I got to remind you guys about RockAuto.com. It's a family-owned business serving auto parts to customers for over 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com, see all the parts that they have for your car or truck. Oh, best of all, prices at RockAuto.com, always really reliably low. It's the same for professionals as it is all the do-it-yourselfers out there. Why in the world would you spend up to twice as much money going somewhere else when you can get the same part over at rockauto.com? No need. Go there right now, see all the parts they got, amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the car parts that you are ever going to need over at rockauto.com. Patriots, going back to what you were talking about with the three teams that you're kind of just not sure about, I agree with you with the Patriots because it's sort of in the same realm with the Giants where you never exactly know what they're thinking because I feel like Belichick can do a lot of different things. And when you look at this offseason, the Patriots were uncharacteristically wealthy in the cap and spent a lot of money because of it. This is just not a place we have often seen the Patriots be over the last 20 years. So this is kind of uncharted waters, if you will. We don't exactly know what's going to happen. They bring back Cam Newton on a one-year deal. It's got heavy incentives to it. So, you know, it's not like they're really connected to him in any way, shape, or form. If he plays great, great. It's a home run. If not, they can move on from it for nothing. And that includes if they get a young quarterback here in this draft. If they sit at 15, it just becomes less and less likely that any of the quarterbacks are going to make it to them. Maybe Mac Jones if Mac isn't picked at 3. But I can't see Justin Fields making it all the way to 15. I can't see the same with Trey Lance as well. If these guys are on the board, I think they're going somewhere within the top 12. And I think the Patriots have to move up. I think that that's something that could absolutely happen. We've heard whispers of a deal between them and Carolina. Somewhat in place. Who knows if it's actually going to happen. I think that that actually happens a lot. There's a lot of details that are kind of agreed upon, and it's just about one team pressing a button to make it final. I think that might be a place where the Patriots are at to move up into the top 10, but that's the way I feel. And if they're sticking at 15, good chance Rayshon Slater's gone, or not Rayshon Slater, good chance that Patrick Surtain is gone, J.C. Horn is gone, Jalen Phillips might be an option for them, maybe Caleb Farley if they really want to get risky with it. Brentley actually kind of convince me that that might be a good move for them. But yeah, no doubt about it. I think 15 is pretty tough.
Oof. Patriots have the opportunity to walk out of the free agency in the draft cycle as like the absolute number one team that took huge steps forward. You know what I mean? Like the biggest improved team. And it boils down to whether or not they're able to get a quarterback. And like you said, we know that they've talked with people in the top 10. The way they're going to be able to make a change on offense, plus the returning help they're going to get on defense, opt-outs coming back and health, whatnot. They have, like, you know, it's going to be annoying, but we're going to be like, oh, guess what? The Patriots might be good again. Wow. all right. Do you have a Super Bowl take? Do you have a right now, like a huge, like, you know, who's going to sneak in around one? You know, who's going to go away early? You know, who's going to fall sort of a thing? Because I feel like that's a very standard question. And so all of my answers already feel pretty jaded. They already feel pretty hackneyed. But what's your big right now?
What does that mean? What is it? What is a Super Bowl take? What is that? What are you talking about?
Right now,
yes.
I want you to say something that's going to happen, and if you're wrong, you'll have zero consequence because it's totally nuts. And if you're right, we'll look like geniuses and we'll put the clip of the podcast literally everywhere we can.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think that if the Panthers trade back, there's a chance that they take Caleb Farley in the top 20. Whether it's at like 15.
Farley's still top 20.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So like his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, said that he was going top 20. And of course, like that's his agent. So he wants to hype his guy up. So he wants to make sure that he goes as high as possible. So you don't want to take, you know, you don't want to take that like as law or anything. But I also heard from some people that the Panthers might really like Caleb Farley. And I think that with them being in on the conversation for a corner, I think that in a lot of mock drafts that you've read over the last 24 hours, you've seen Carolina, maybe Patrick Surtain, maybe J.C. Horn. Well, I think that Caleb Farley is well on their radar as well, and they would like him if they move back. They're not going to draft Caleb Farley at 8 or anything, so it might depend on how far they move back. It might depend on who else is on the board, of course. I think Rayshon Slater would certainly be a target. Christian Darrisaw could be a target. Obviously, Penei Sewell would be a target. But let's say that the Panthers move back to number 15, and let's say all of those guys are off the board. I think that they could actually consider Caleb Farley to still make him a first-round pick. I don't know what other team would do that, which makes it kind of dangerous. Like, I probably think the Saints are the only other team in the first round that might take the chance on Caleb Farley. We've heard that they really want a corner. They might be aggressive to go up and get one. So I think that there's a chance that the Saints could be the other team, but I don't know how many other teams would be confident in Caleb Farley in round one because of what we've heard with the injury history. But I do believe that Carolina could be one of them. And I think that this could be a good spot if they trade down. They feel like they make up entirely for the Sam Darnold trade. They go get Farley. They take a chance on an offensive tackle in round two. And so that is my that was my swing at the fences selection in my mock draft that I had, is keeping Caleb Farley in the first round and having him go number 15 to the Panthers. So that was my, yeah, that was probably my right. boldest take in my mock.
He's a very difficult one. Him and Aziz, when you get health problems that crop up, at least in conversation the week before the draft, it's so difficult to calibrate to where you think he's going to end up. You know what I mean? Because you may get one or two people that tell you, like, you know, we had somebody be like, oh, Christian Darrisaw is going to fall to the 20s, you know, because he's a little bit of a loafer and he had the health thing, whatever. Okay, well, that's 48 hours out. If we had another week, then you'd hear from six other people, and some people would disagree and some people wouldn't, and eventually we'd all kind of settle in a general consensus area for Christian Darrisaw. Mm-hmm. We don't get that opportunity now. You know what I mean? It's right. just kind of like, all right, he's going somewhere, and it's pretty much the same range we already had him going. It was, he could go as early as 13 to the Chargers, he could go as late as 20 to the Bears.
What about you? Do you have a home run pick that you can say on this podcast is a safe space, and if it's right, we'll clip it, and if it's not, it never happened?
Well, so I have Leatherwood going to the Colts at 21, which I think is as early as you'll see Leatherwood.
I thought about getting Leatherwood in here, but I ended up having him off of my first round.
Right. So yeah, that's the thing, is like, if he doesn't go to the Colts at 21, it feels like other teams would like tackles more. But with the way that Leatherwood jumped and playing in the SEC and the fact that he has the left tackle experience, right? If there's no Darris on the board, then they're looking at like a Tevin Jenkins, right, as the other potential OT4, and Tevin doesn't have nearly as much left tackle experience. He has some, but he doesn't have as much. So I have Leatherwood to the Colts over Tevin, which I changed literally yesterday. Like, I've had Tevin for a while, and then I made the switch. So I'm worried about that, but I've got Leatherwood.
Who do you have the Raiders taking at 17?
Jalen Phillips.
Oh, okay. All right.
Everybody is big on tackle for the Raiders, and I'm not as convinced. Joe's laughing at me from across the table here. Joe's apparently convinced it's tackle for the Raiders. I'm being scoffed at. There's nothing better than joining up with the TDN crew after not seeing them for an entire year and just not knowing what they know with confidence. And so you say, like, hey, I think the Raiders may not take a tackle. And then Joe Marino laughs directly in your face on your own show.
Tell Joe to get his own podcast.
Get your own podcast, Joe.
Tell him I said that, Trev. Personally.
Trev said that, yeah. So we'll see what the Raiders do. So I think that one. I also think, and we've talked about this all week, not only do we expect Jamin Davis to be the pick at 19 to the Washington football team, but like I can find a good spot for Zaven Collins. I think he goes to the Cardinals and they like him a lot. I think the Washington football team likes Jamin a lot. Parsons, I expect to go round one just because of the talent. It's very, very hard to find the Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah spot, which is not to say I think he falls at round one. I think he goes.
I think so too.
But all of the excitement, all of the love, all of the juice, oh, this guy's so fast, he's so physical. Well, when the rubber meets the road, teams start to make that board and realize we might not have a spot, a very clear spot, a very clear role for starter number of snaps for a 220-pound guy who played box safety overhang in a very college-inspired defense. We don't know how we're going to get him on the field and what it's going to look like exactly. So I think a team takes him. I think the Browns at 26 and the Jaguars at 25 and even the Ravens at 27 and the Saints at 28, like all of that stretch makes sense.
I think Washington too. I mean, I think that, you know, we have guessed that it would be Jamin Davis. Both of us have Jamin Davis going number 19 to Washington, but I think that maybe if they, you know, from what we've heard, obviously they like Jamin Davis really well, but what if that's always under the assumption that Owusu-Koramoah is, like, not there? You know, like, we've also heard, hey, the Broncos might really love him. So I don't know if the Broncos are going to take Owusu-Koramoah at 9, but maybe, like, if they trade back, Owusu-Koramoah could definitely be a target for him. So maybe Washington's just thinking to themselves, oh, you know, if Owusu-Koramoah is not going to be there, then Jamin Davis would be the guy. And then us, on the other side of the sources, are just hearing people be like, yeah, look out for Jamin Davis, but I think that Washington could be in play for them as well if he is still available. But if not, then I agree with you. I think that he is for sure a first-round pick. It's just about finding where he lands at the back end of round one.
So I guess my hot take is, he could fall out of round one just because I don't know where in round one he's going. And so I don't feel conviction that he goes to round one because I can't find where he goes in round one. He probably goes in round one, which is not an actual take. I think Milton Williams could be a first round pick. I think Levi Onwuzurike could be a first round pick. I don't see it, man.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh my goodness. All right. I'm not doing the podcast anymore. I'm done because Joe's just laughing at every single thing I say.
Tell Joe to go in the other room.
Every single thing I say, Joe either sends me a look at worst or openly laughs at me at best.
Listen, I've mocked 1,800 different players to the Bills in all of them. No matter what position, shape, or size, Joe just goes, nah, I hate it. And I'm like, okay, there's no pleasing you. There's no pleasing you.
We're officially at the point where everybody thinks that they know the draft so well that any other ideas have to be cast aside. We got to get this first round going, baby. That's enough.
Okay, let's kind of like close it out here. We got about 10 minutes left. What is your favorite pairing that you might have in the 20s? Or like 20 to 32, what is a... And it might not even be something that happened in your mock because maybe you don't believe a player is going to get here. And let's keep it obviously realistic, but... What's a pairing that you would actually love to see? Maybe not a prediction, but a pairing that you would absolutely love to see. I love Greg Newsome going to Cleveland. You know, when we talked to Nathan Zagura on our guest mock draft series, I mean, he got me jazzed. Like, he got me hyped up for Greg Newsome going to the Cleveland Browns at 26. And I've been told that I'm a little bit too high on Newsome. You know, I talked about Newsome potentially being a guy who could go in the teens, and I guess that still might be the case just because he plays corner, but it seems as though everybody else is predicting that Newsome's going a lot lower, at least a lot closer to the back end of round one. And so I've tried to cool the hype a little bit on it. I've tried to put my analysis aside and say, okay, here, I'm predicting this for the teams themselves, and it seems like this is the range for him. And if Newsome can get to 26... You look up and down this Cleveland Browns roster, and it feels a lot like the Buffalo Bills, right? There's just not many holes, but that CB2 spot is the one that they would love to upgrade the most. And so I feel like Newsome to the Browns is a great fit that I would love to see happen. This is one that I actually did have in my mock draft, but it's one that I would really like to see.
I like Newsome to the Browns at 26. I love Rashad Bateman at 22 to the Titans. I've seen a lot of people start to put Elijah Moore there. And if they took Elijah Moore, I would be happy. I would also be pleasantly surprised because I don't see Matt Vrabel being super on board with just that short of a player. For as tough as he might be, it does not read to me that Vrabel Robinson front office is guys with size, guys with stopping power. And so to me, Bateman makes more sense. But I would like Elijah Moore there. Regardless, Bateman continues to be my pick, and I think that's a lot of fun. My mind goes to the New Orleans Saints, where I think it's now expected that we start to see a little bit of a late run on corner. We've brought up Caleb Farley being able to make it back into round one. Mm-hmm. Greg Newsome is a player we expect to go in the 20s. You get to that second tier of Eric Stokes out of Georgia, Tyson Campbell out of Georgia, and Asante Samuel out of Florida State. And you've heard recent buzz for all three players being able to make it in the back of round one. I personally think the best of that group is Asante Samuel. You need to be able to get him in a good defense, an appropriate defense for him to succeed. But if you use him right, I think he's a starter. Saints at 28, Packers at 29, Bills at 30. All could be those teams. You know, the Saints with Dennis Allen have been a zone team before, but they like to be able to default to man with Marshawn Lattimore there. I don't know if they take Asante Samuel over Eric Stokes and over Tyson Campbell with the athleticism and the size considered. Green Bay at 29 already has Jair Alexander. If they're comfortable with two sub-6-foot corners, a little bit lacking in size, a little bit lacking in density, but not lacking in spirit and toughness, their ability then to play quarters and play cover two is going to be awesome if that's what Joe Barry wants to do. He wants to bring that Rams defensive backfield approach. And then the Bills at 30, Sean McDermott, who coached Asante Samuel Sr., obviously a heavy zone team like that. Those fits are awesome. And so I'm very excited by the idea of Asante Samuel being able to go round one because I love the player. Wish he could fall to the Eagles at 37, but it's way cooler that he's going round one. That stretch right there is the stretch to me where he can potentially land, and I like all three landing spots. I think for different reasons and for varying approaches. And then I hope Trevon Merritt goes to the Ravens. That'd be awesome.
You mentioned it was kind of tough to find a landing spot for Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. I settled in on the Jaguars at 25. Did you as well? He's at 25. I actually really like this. And yes, I'm going back on what I was preaching over the last month, where I think that Urban Meyer could just get offensive speed crazy. And I look, I still think that that could happen. I still think that when the Jaguars get on the clock at 25, Urban Meyer is going to go, no, I don't care that we have the early second round picks on day two to go get wide receiver. I want to go get the player that I think is going to give the most impact for my offense with the most speed. He could very well do that. However, Owusu-Koramoah, without a doubt, gives them that dynamic ability. He gives them that adjective on defense. They just signed Rayshon Jenkins. He's coming off the best season of his career from the Chargers as a free safety. The Jaguars don't really have great options at strong safety, or should I say impact options, and they also would need some extra juice at the linebacker level. So all of a sudden, you know, as long as they're willing to play Owusu-Koramoah in the right ways, you get a guy who can fill almost two different roles for you and have an impact all over your defense, right in the middle and even on the back end. And so I think that Owusu-Koramoah gives you that football background that everybody loves. He gives you that speed, although it's on the defensive side of the ball, not the offensive side of the ball. And the more I thought about it, the more I was like, man, this makes a lot of sense if he drops to this point. So I'm hedging my bets by saying don't be surprised if he still goes Rondale Moore, Kadarius Toney, something like that here at 25. But I also, I love the Owusu-Koramoah too much to not make it happen in my mock. I think if he makes it, they're really going to consider it.
Barmore can be there. JOK can be there. Any of the wide receivers, I agree, can be there. Another defensive tackle, if we're going to get one of those in round one, because apparently Barmore's stock is all over the place right now. Jacksonville's a tough one. Safety, but Merrick is also a candidate to go
right
there.
Right.
Jaguars at 25. They're in a good spot because I think that they're going to get value come to them, but it's not an easy spot to prognosticate right now. Jets at 23. Go ahead.
No, I was just about to say, this is the last guy that I'll talk about. Zaven Collins. You know, you had a lot of conviction about him going number 16 to the Cardinals. Could totally see it from everything that we've been told. But what if Zaven's not going 16? Because I have the Cardinals having the chance to go get Devontae Smith. And as we talked about, I think on this podcast, the Cardinals could have the opportunity to tell their fan base, ooh, we have two of the last three Heisman Trophy winners on our offense. And like, I just feel like that's something that's very Cardinals. Like, that's something that they would want to do. They have some impact wide receiver needs, even with the addition of AJ Green. And so I have them getting the chance to take Devontae Smith, which means Zaven Collins slides for me. And I had a difficult time finding a home for him outside of 16 with the Cardinals, and knowing that I wanted to give Washington Jamin Davis because I know they like him a lot.
I didn't worry about it because he's going to the Cardinals.
Okay. Okay. That's
fair. No, it's very funny. The Najee Harris at 24 sensation has now become the Cardinals at 16 with Zaven Collins sensation. So many mocks have. I'm at 20 because I have it with a trade, but regardless, it's Cardinals Zaven Collins love is pretty known at this point. Does that mean they have to go that way? No. Trade up for wide receiver is still in the cards. Corner is still in the cards. It's just known that they really like Zaven, so it's a good landing spot. With that said, there's way too many teams. Dolphins at 18, Washington at 19, Tennessee at 22. I would say Browns at 26 as well.
Mm-hmm.
That can find a spot for Zaven, and even before the Cardinals, 15 to the Patriots. Too many teams that would find a spot for a player like Zaven and would enjoy a player like Zaven. I'm of the three non-Micah Parsons linebackers, the one I'm most confident goes round one is Zaven Collins, which I know some people have him a little bit later, but to me, football guys are going to see a 260-pound stack linebacker with sideline-to-sideline ability and rush ability and be like, yep, we're going to go get that football player.
I like Zaven a lot, man. And I had to get him in the first round. I have him at the Ravens. And look, the Ravens do a lot more odd front stuff. And he's more of probably a 4-3 linebacker. But I do think that the size and the overall athletic ability from Zaven Collins gives him a ton of flexibility. Like, I really do think that even if the Ravens drafted him, and I'm not so sure that that happens, I was just kind of finding a home for him in the first round. He could fill some edge roles for them. He could help them out at linebacker. He could do a lot of different stuff. But I do agree with you. I think that he's a first rounder when it's all said and done. All right, we're going to get out of here. Everybody, please watch the stream. Ben and I believe, are going live. Brinks.tv and TDN social channels. If you follow us on Twitter, if that's the main way that you follow the Draft Network, that's where we're going to start our live broadcast tonight for night one of the 2021 NFL Draft. Ben and I will be doing the pre-draft show at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, I believe, is when we start. And then, of course, the draft begins at 8. We'll be going all night long, full live stream. Folks, it's going to be amazing. We have so many different sets and different cameras and different ways to talk to our different scouts and experts and have some crazy, raw, natural reaction to every single pick as it's made. This is going to be a blast. I'm so excited for it. I hope you guys will join us for it. Ben and I will also be recording a post-first round edition of the podcast, I believe, live on that channel as well, right after the first round is done. So you get your fill here on this episode, before the draft, during the draft, and after the draft. Hope you guys aren't sick of us by the end of round one, because it's going to be a long weekend, but it's going to be a very, very fun weekend. We finally made it. Hope you guys can enjoy it. Kick back, eat your favorite food, watch your favorite team, hopefully draft the player that you want. Wishing you all good luck. We'll see you on the live stream and on the next episode. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.